Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Carly Weimer, on her ministry to reach incarcerated youth with the gospel.
When a young person is locked up, all distractions are gone for the most part. They don't have their cell phones. They don't have headphones in. And they really have a safe space to come to know Jesus. Then they go home where they feel ridicule from maybe friends for trying to live a new life.
Carly Weimer next. Juvenile detention continues to be a challenging and concerning issue in the U.S. as tens of thousands of youth under the age of 18 are locked up on any given day, and hundreds of thousands of teens are referred to the juvenile justice system every year. Hence the great need for Youth for Christ Juvenile Justice Ministry. This ministry serves in many detention centers, residential placement facilities, group homes, and youth homeless shelters throughout the country. To get the details, we contacted Carly Weimer, National Juvenile Justice Ministry Lead for Youth for Christ. Carly, this ministry is part of Youth for Christ. First, tell us about YFC and what it does.
Youth for Christ's mission is to go where young people are. And so our goal is to find those spaces like high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, with deaf teens, with teen parents, in inner city neighborhoods. We go where they are. Our goal is to reach that 11 to 19 age range. And our hope is to, of course, raise up lifelong followers of Jesus who then pour back into their communities, who then are discipled and then become discipled, not just by staff, but by volunteers who commit to serving the community as well. Our very first employee was Billy Graham. Mm. He started these Youth for Christ rallies back in the day in about 1944. And since then, we've realized that ministry with young people looks like walking alongside them, building authentic Christ-sharing relationships, and sharing the hope of Christ.
Mm. Well, Carly, I'm wondering if you could introduce us to the National Juvenile Justice Ministry, what it is, what it does, what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Juvenile Justice Ministry works with young people within the juvenile justice system. For a long time, it was only working with young people who were in juvenile serving institutions. But recently, we actually added these components of community, core, and correction. So the idea is that we get to meet and connect with and mentor young people, not only while they are locked up, but before they ever hit the juvenile justice system, or back when they get home and they get into their communities. Our goal is to go into these spaces where young people are experiencing some pretty serious life events happening, whether they have committed a crime or a crime has been committed against them. But what we know is that they're experiencing a very pivotal moment of their life, and they can seem to think like, this is it, this is the end. I've made a bad mistake. I've made a poor choice, and nobody will ever want me, and nobody will ever care for me. And so our goal is to step into those spaces to teach them about God, but also to come from a very holistic approach. We know that if we walk into a detention center and we just slam our Bible on the table, yeah, these young people aren't going to get it. They're not going to want to participate. So we do have a very holistic approach of, oh, hey, you don't know where you're sleeping tonight. How can we help you? Oh, you need some help and connection on getting resources for your family. Hey, we can help you get connected to that. And through that, we share the light of Jesus.
Well, and as you mentioned, you are trying to reach them, obviously, before they get incarcerated. That's part of the Ministry of Youth for Christ. But also the National Juvenile Justice Ministry, this juvenile justice ministry, reaches them, as you said, once they are incarcerated. And I wonder if we could talk just for a few minutes about that issue of youth incarceration. I think perhaps a certain number of people may not be aware that youth are actually incarcerated. Can you talk about that? What does that look like, youth incarceration?
Yeah, absolutely. On any given day, nearly 60,000 youth under the age of 18 are incarcerated in juvenile jails and prisons. Each year, over 700,000 teens are referred to the juvenile justice system. Now, what that looks like is less than previous years, which is good. You know, in society today, people might think, oh, more kids are getting in trouble and oh, this is happening. But actually, we're realizing that community-based programming is happening. So young people are either being sentenced to a juvenile institution stay, or they are sent to a residential placement facility to gain more treatment, or they might be in a community-based program similar to probation or diversion.
Okay, and there is a small percentage that does end up in adult prison, but that's like the smallest percentage.
Yes, it is small. A couple states have some laws where juveniles can't go into adult jails or prisons, but there are moments where some young people actually do end up in a serious place similar to that because of their crime or because of laws of different states.
How does a youth, Carly, come to be incarcerated? I mean, it sounds like they would have to commit some sort of a serious offense or be a repeat offender, something like that.
Yeah, a lot of people think that. And so, yes, there are situations where they've committed a crime or they, you know, just don't listen to authority, right? Like that's a thought. But what we've come to know is that a lot of incarceration comes from a space of trauma from either their families or what they've experienced in their lifetime. Sometimes young people are incarcerated because they don't have family to take care of them and there's nowhere else for them to go. So you're thinking kids, you know, oh, they're in foster care. There's got to be a foster home. No, not always. Sometimes young people get incarcerated for that. There are moments where we've seen that it is safer for a young person to be locked up than to be in their community. And so they might commit some type of crime, but really there's a deeper rooted problem going on.
And the length of time for the incarceration, I mean, that obviously varies depending upon the reason for it.
It does. It varies depending on the reason for it. It varies depending on which institution that they go to. I would say an average juvenile detention center stay ranges right around 3 to 5 weeks is an average stay. But I've seen anywhere as long as one night to as long as quite a few months, depending on the institution that they're at.
Well, my guest today on His People is Carly Weimer. She's National Juvenile Justice Ministry Lead with Youth for Christ. We're talking about juvenile incarceration and how Youth for Christ ministers to youth in that situation. Well, as we start to talk about the ministry here, Carly, what are the goals? What are your goals for YFC's National Juvenile Justice Ministry? And then as you explained to me before we did this conversation, you're also involved in a hands-on way in this exact ministry in your community.
Yeah, absolutely. Our goal is to build relationships with youth while they are in detention centers and anywhere that justice-involved youth may be. So this means not only in lockup, like I shared, but in these different spaces. So it means that we're helping young people navigate the different aspects of the juvenile justice system, of community courts and corrections. And I'm not only supervising and pouring into other people who do juvenile justice ministry. I'm in quite a few facilities myself. I'm in 2 juvenile detention centers, an adult jail, and in some mentoring programs in the community in which we call aftercare. And so our goal is to care for these people and to help them not return back into a locked up institution if we can help lower that recidivism rate.
You are directly involved. Can you tell us a little bit about what that kind of ministry looks like? And you're obviously passionate about it. It's something that God has called you to do.
I love what I get to do. And what I love most, I know, is that I don't have to do it alone, that we raise up other loving, caring adults to do this as well, because my story might not relate to every single student I work with. And so I love that I get to work alongside a team of volunteers who don't get paid to do it, but they pour into the lives of young people. And so that looks weekly like doing programming in the facility, providing Bible studies, providing chapel, providing life skills, as well as mentoring in the community and in investing in the lives of young people. I have a background where I got in trouble, just never got caught by the grace of God. And I knew that there needed to be change in the system, that things needed to be different. And working with Youth for Christ has provided that way to bring about a new type of programming, a holistic approach of programming for young people to not only get their needs met, but come to know Jesus along the way.
Well, that's kind of, I guess, in a sense, the bottom line, knowing that when someone puts their faith in Jesus, that he's the one that changes their life.
It's not because I walk in and get to hang out with a student. I actually just Tuesday was in my detention center and was speaking with a young lady, and it's time for us to leave. And she says, "Miss Carly, actually, I have something to share to the unit. You know, we've been working with this young lady for a long time. She claimed to be Muslim. She claimed that she wasn't old enough to accept Jesus. She didn't feel like she was." So we're like, "Okay, yeah, share. What's going on?" She said, "I decided to stop procrastinating on God." And I accepted Jesus into my heart. And we're talking, this is the last, like, we were already supposed to be out of the unit by then. They had their next activity planned. And it was on her time. We weren't there when she accepted Jesus, but we were planting and watering the seeds and created a space for her to feel safe and to feel like she could ask questions and get to know who God was. And she did it on her own terms, which is beautiful.
Can you give us an idea of how it, what it looks like? I think you talked about mentoring relationships. I mean, you go into a facility, obviously the facility wants you to come in, and yeah, and you go in. I mean, do you hold a Bible study or a meeting or something? And then, I mean, I'm just wondering the process.
Every facility is different and has its different aspects to it across the United States. But specifically where I am, we come in ready to host a Bible study. We tell young people, "You are not required to attend." We kind of give them the space of, "You are more than welcome to join us and hear what we feel like God has to say." But We provide this experience. We let them know, "Hey, feel free to come along," and we share what the Bible says. We faithfully and accurately handle the Bible and share with young people what it says. And then we leave time to build relationships. So it's not just walking in and shoving a Bible in their face. It's getting our butts beat in a game of spades. It is, you know, talking with a young person who's really struggling and just needing some one-on-one help. It is also sometimes praying for the staff of the facility. They are with those kids day in and day out. And so we are working with them. And so this mentoring takes place. We are taking notes and remembering, "Hey, how do we help this young person? This person says that they're struggling with this. Hey, we're going to bring in resources next week." And then the goal is to continue that relationship into the community. So the facilities love that we're there. They love that we get to share life with not only students and staff, but then the goal is to continue that into the community and pour into those young people's lives.
So you, in other words, you try to stay in touch with them once they leave the incarceration.
Yes. Yes, we do. So we collect some contact information at my local facilities. And, you know, we always give the students our phone numbers, but they're teenagers, they lose our business cards. And so we also have a goal and commitment to connect with families as well. And so typically we collect a phone number of a mom or a granny or somebody who's in the family so that we can follow up once they leave, not only when they go home, but if they go to a residential placement or they end up getting sent to a jail or prison, we continue to meet with these young people.
Obviously, lots of blessings involved in this ministry, Carly. I'm wondering, what about challenges? I mean, obviously, often these are kids that have had kind of a difficult life to this point, or they made choices which, at least in their case, they're not all perpetrators. Some are victims, sure. But so they've got some difficult situations. What challenges do you encounter?
Yeah, absolutely. There are challenges working with young people, especially those who they've never seen a life outside of crime. Their parents maybe were incarcerated. That's all that they've known. And so we see this with young people of they feel like they don't have a future. They feel like they don't have hope. There's also some challenges in the amount of numbers of teens in gangs. They aren't getting love from their family all the time. And so that's where they kind of go to is this idea of this gang mentality and being involved. But also we have found that although when a young person is locked up, all distractions are gone for the most part. They don't have their cell phones. They don't have headphones in. And they really have a safe space to come to know Jesus. Then they go home where they feel ridicule from maybe friends for trying to live a new life, or they fall back into those same circumstances. And you know, if I could, I'd invite all of them to live at my house and love and care for them if I could. But that's not how it works. And Satan is very real. And so I think the challenges that we see are not just of this world, but they are of Satan and the way that he's trying to grip their lives and remind them that they're not worthy, that they can never overcome, as well as, you know, the average typical teenage struggles in regards to anxiety and self-esteem and peer pressure. Those all very much fall into these young people. They are normal teenagers. They've just made some bad choices here and there.
See, one comes to Christ, a young person comes to Christ. What's the next step that would take?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a pretty great follow-up program within our facilities. The goal is not like, okay, you know, we gave an invitation and, oh, you raised your hand. Oh, great. Now we count you. No, the goal is in that follow-up. And so we continue to dive into different Bible study material and discipleship material, because our goal is to walk alongside these young people. But what we do know is that as a nonprofit organization, we are not the church. The church is still very important, the rock of our faith.
Yeah.
And so we many times bring them to church with us. We get them connected in local organizations and local churches to be able to grow in their faith. And so it's more than just making a one-time decision like, okay, yep, you're good. Sometimes it takes a lot of mentoring and continued connection for them to really feel like I made this decision and I know what I'm doing.
And these, obviously some of these kids, I mean, this is a serious point in their life where it could be, if the Lord gets hold of them, if they to trust in him, I mean, their lives can be changed, but they could be unfortunately on that path to prison, right?
Absolutely. And some of them are, and some of them give their life to Christ and yet still go to prison. And what we know as an organization, as Juvenile Justice Ministry, who loves these young people, is that we don't give up. And so just the other day, I had two of my volunteers, a husband and wife couple, who drove over 2 hours during one of our biggest Michigan snowstorms that we had this year to visit one of our young men who was spending time in a prison. And for confidentiality, we'll call him Aaron. Mm-hmm. Aaron told my volunteers, Dave and Shane, my family hasn't even come to visit me, and you guys visited me in a snowstorm. And so, you know, the relationship didn't end. That is the goal of Juvenile Justice Ministry, is that we continue to invest. I'm still investing in a young woman who I met my very first day as a Juvenile Justice Ministry intern back in 2015. She's now in her early 20s, and I still am mentoring her and walking alongside her in life, because we know that relationships are eternal.
Carly, I read somewhere that your ministry, the National Juvenile Justice Ministry, uses a relational ministry model. I don't want to get too technical, but it was in some literature that I read, a model called Three Story. Does that Absolutely. Ring a bell? What is that?
It sure does. Yeah. So if you ever look up Youth for Christ, if you put us in Google, what you're going to see is you're going to see a diagram that almost looks like a triple Venn diagram, right? It's got three circles. And so therefore we say three story. That is God's story, their story, and our story. Their story meaning a student, our story meaning leaders or staff. And the goal is that we are all intertwined. And so in relational ministry, we are building relationship together. And if for some reason a volunteer leaves the mission of YFC or a student kind of falls off, if our circle disconnects, then our student circle is still connected to God, because he is the source in both leader and staff story, as well as student story. It's the most important to be connected to God first, and then together we build relationship together in this world.
Mm. I'd read also that there are five essentials to minister to youth that are involved in this kind of justice, either incarceration or they have some kind of interaction with the justice system. Can you talk about those? Or five, I mean, really important core elements of your ministry?
Yeah, absolutely. We know that in order to do ministry well, that we have things that are essential to caring for young people. Number one is widespread prayer. We can't do this without God. We need prayer from not only our staff, but people who will intercede on behalf of the young people for our ministry site. We have some people who voluntarily just pray for us. You know, they're like, hey, actually, I don't really like hanging out with kids, but I will pray. for you and your ministry site. The other essential is loving relationships. We consistently pursue lost kids and engage them in lifelong relationships with Jesus. It's not, oh, we just pursue them one day a month. No, we know that it needs to be consistent. The next one is faithful Bible teaching. We are accurately sharing the truth of the Bible, and we are regularly in the Bible ourselves because we want these young people to be able to apply it in their lives. The next essential is collaborative community strategy. We are working with the local church and other like-minded partners to serve these young people and to help them connect sustainably in ministry, but also to help their families as well. We are not just trying to help our young people. We're also trying to help the bigger picture. And then our last essential is adults who empower. We strategically develop leaders to reach young people from every people group. We want people who can invest in the lives of young people who might have similar stories, who might have different stories, but that come from varieties of backgrounds, and care for young people in such a big way that every young people group is represented in our ministry.
Now, you mentioned early on, Carly, and this would make sense, that you rely at least somewhat, maybe heavily, on volunteers. And I'm wondering, well, a couple of things. One is, what kind of volunteer opportunities are available for people that want to get involved in this kind of ministry that reaches young people who have an intersection with the juvenile justice system? But then also, secondly, what if there isn't a ministry like this in their community? What can they do to maybe start one?
On our Youth for Christ website, you can go and you can see if there's a local chapter near you. And so there's people on our teams who voluntarily go into places like detention centers or the high schools or in the communities and invest in the lives of young people. And so that's one way that people can volunteer. We need prayer warriors. We need people praying on behalf of young people. And so that's another way that we can volunteer. We also have people who financially support. And so they join our team financially and support local ministry and care for our local ministers, as well as different Youth for Christ chapters have other roles. Maybe it's voluntarily helping set up an event, or I'm always looking for people to help me serve Thanksgiving dinner in the detention center, right? So there's many different ways that people can get involved. Now, unfortunately, we are not everywhere yet. I mean, I'm really hoping one day we get there. We have over 140 chapters of Youth for Christ. And so we're kind of all over the U.S., but not everywhere. And so my suggestion would be, if you don't have Youth for Christ near you, or you don't have one that you can connect to, reach out to your local detention facilities, your local juvenile serving institutions. They typically are looking for people to do very similar things. Maybe it's not run a small group, but it's helping clean up after lunch, or it's providing a life skill, or teaching a class on budgeting. There's many different ways that if you connect with your local facility, whether it's with the superintendent or a program director, that you can get involved in a facility working with juvenile involved youth.
And it would seem that there must be a certain number of churches, local churches, that have ministries like this.
Absolutely. Local churches, also adults serving volunteer opportunities who end up having juveniles, right? There's a program at my local jail that serves the adults, but we also have a juvenile pod. So when you think of prison ministry, you think of prison writing ministry, you think of places like Reach the Forgotten. There are many spots out there where you can work with justice-involved people, and a lot of times there are youth there.
Well, Carly Weimer is my guest today on His People. She is the National Juvenile Justice Ministry Lead of Youth for Christ. And Carly, how long has this ministry been active? Do you know how long has Youth for Christ had this kind of outreach?
Yeah, so Youth for Christ, the Juvenile Justice Ministry used to be called Youth Guidance. Mm. And so if I'm remembering correctly, back in like the 60s, 70s is when this idea of youth guidance and actually used to work at like youth ranches and youth homes where what they would have said troubled youth were at. And so it's been since then, and the name has kind of transitioned and changed into what we call now Juvenile Justice Ministry.
Well, how did the Lord lead you into this kind of ministry? I think you mentioned that you'd gotten into a little bit of trouble mm-hmm. when you were younger. You didn't get caught, but I'm just wondering how did the Lord lead you to minister to youth?
When my dad died, I was 13. He passed away from cancer, and my life was wrecked, or so I thought. You know, all of a sudden I'm being raised by a single mom, and she is doing her very best, doing what she can do, trying to raise two teenage daughters. And I started to really struggle with depression and anxiety and not understanding where I was going. I was a straight A student. I played multiple sports. I was really, you would have known that nothing was wrong, but on the inside, it felt like I was falling apart. And so in that moment, as I got into high school, I started to hang out with a friend who kind of got me included in the wrong crowd. And then as most teenagers, you get interested in a boyfriend or what have you. And so I ended up dating a guy who kind of coped with his emotions by drinking. And so that's what I did, was I started to drink. He also was part of a gang and was selling drugs, and he needed some help. And so I started helping him sell his drugs. All while I had a stepbrother on probation at the time and was like really fascinated with the system, and understanding that aspect of it, while also, you know, behind the scenes kind of out partying, trying to push away my emotions and my feelings and doing things that I really shouldn't have been doing. During that moment, though, I got involved in a Youth for Christ program at my high school called Campus Life.
Oh.
And I had leaders walk alongside me and pour into me. They saw my potential. I even was invited to be a student leader, even though I was doing all these things that I shouldn't have been doing. They saw potential in me, and they did not give up. They continued to mentor me, and I gave my life to Christ through Youth for Christ Campus Life. And knew that this change in my life of getting away from drinking and breaking off any relationships of negative peers, I found so much more glory in God's goodness. And so that's kind of where I started. So then that created this passion for the justice system, because I truly think that there were moments that I didn't get caught because of what I looked like, because I didn't look like other people that I was hanging out with. And I really did get away from things. And I said, I know that there needs to be change in the system. And so went on, and I have a degree in criminal justice, juvenile justice, and intercultural competency. Just really passionate about caring for the young people in the system.
Definitely a calling.
Absolutely. And love the mission of YFC. Just have been really impacted by the idea of going where young people are and not giving up.
Well, Carly Weimer, my guest, National Juvenile Justice Ministry lead for Youth for Christ, also involved in that ministry on her local level, if it's okay to mention, in Michigan and Grand Rapids, very involved there. Well, Carly, if someone listening to this would like more information, for whatever reason, maybe they want to get involved in one of these ways that you mentioned, how do you suggest they get that?
Absolutely. Our best way to get information is through our national website. And our website is www.yfc.net. And that will have absolutely everything that you need and will guide you to where you need to go in regards to what is the ministry, but also is there a ministry nearby me? I also know that Youth for Christ has a couple of social media pages on Facebook and Instagram and things like that. But our website will guide you where you need to go, and even will connect you if you're interested in juvenile justice ministry specifically. There is a link to communicate with myself directly. And so always happy to answer questions. But yeah, if you need more info, our website's the place to go.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Carly Weimer, National Juvenile Justice Ministry Lead for Youth for Christ. Go to yfc.net. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Andrew Wilson on how understanding a number of major events in 1776 helps us understand who we are today.
And one of the dangers of not knowing the past at all is you effectively cede control of the way you understand your own cultural moment and the way to respond appropriately to it to people who tell that narrative more noisily or more convincingly than you. So if you don't have a plausible historical narrative of why the world is as it is, the church is as it is, one of the things, you can just descend into fear. You can say, I just don't understand what's going on. It's all coming out of nowhere. Everything seems to catch you out. Everything's surprising or unsettling.
That's tomorrow at this same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.